they speak about anything I'm not getting. Okay. I think I'll speak about chanting. So much to take that one topic, and it's such a big topic. I'd like to speak about two things. One is how to use the mind when chanting, and how to use the intelligence when chanting. During the Festival of Inspiration, it was a Festival of Inspiration, one of the presenters was Satchinandan Swami, and that was a Festival of Inspiration in itself, just having his association. One of the he gave a morning Bhagavatam class on the art of transformation. He's developing a whole center in Germany. He described to me some couple weeks ago. He has like 19 people working full time on developing curriculum for a program on transformation of the heart. And by the summer of next year, he expects that it will be ready to roll out and invite students from around the world to come take part in it. And as far as I could understand, what he did for that morning class, the art of transformation, is just one part of like a 9-month curriculum, like a semester of school or something. And he drew a chart. Here's the flip chart of the page now. Showed in a very simple way, like a path going through various gates, like those of you that may have been to Sri Rangam, you know there's large Gopurams, and you go through each Gopuram, and there's a whole other area, and then another Gopuram, another arch, another gateway, and another. So that's 7, like in the gates of Vaikuntha. But he made a drawing that showed 4 gates as like stages of chanting. The first is physical. Next is properly engaging the mind. Then another gate is entering into the realm of the heart. And then directly to the platform of the soul. And that's the goal. The goal is our real spiritual identity connects with Krishna on the platform of the soul through the medium of chanting. So because I asked our host and hostess to what would you like me to speak about, you said, we're beginners, there's something that will help beginners. So that's why I selected this. Chanting with the assumption that we're all doing some form of chanting on a regular or at least occasional basis, if not a regular basis. How do we get the most from that chanting? So the first level is the physical, is to chant. Like Prabhupada describes using the lips and the tongue and the teeth. moving the motor parts of the body so that the sound comes out, the sound of spiritual sound, just like you told your neighbors. It'll be noise, but it'll be spiritual. What's the difference between spiritual and material noise, or the spiritual and material sound? Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described, it's you can make a machine that can make some sound. We do that with in trams, like Atlanta Airport, or some different places. They can just simulate a voice, and it's just vibrations, and it comes together sounding like syllables, and it comes out, and they can instruct you, welcome to Orlando Airport. It's not just a recorded voice, it's a simulated sound. Sound clear, closing doors. The friend's about to leave. You know, they did it deliberately because it's funny. And gets everybody's attention, so they're staying clear of the closing doors. So you can make a machine that can chant, or train a parrot or a bird to chant. So that's not... That's the physical part, but the spiritual sound is some recognition, on some level, some recognition of what that sound vibration is. So, there's a nice verse from Padma Purana, Namachin Pavani Krishnas, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shudho Nitya Mukto Abhinatvam Nama Namino. Just taking the first line. The Nama Chintamani Krishnas. Chintamani is touchstone, and touchstone is the alchemy term, that there's some special stone, a touchstone, that when it comes in contact with base metal, it transforms base metal into gold. Very valuable touchstone. The holy name acts like touchstone also, because it can transform ordinary consciousness into spiritual consciousness. So the quality of the sound of the quality of the sound of Krishna's name, the quality of the sound of God's name, is spiritual, and therefore it acts in a spiritual way. So it takes some amount of faith enough to come together with God and chant, and even involuntarily the neighbors are there hearing. At least they're hearing the drum, they may not be hearing the syllables of Krishna's name. But the drum carries that sound of Krishna's name. How it works. And it spiritualizes. So that the first level is just physical, so with the assumption that there's some practice of chanting, occasional or regular chanting. The next gopuram, the next dwaram, the next gate to go forward, is bringing the mind to focus, and that's a good place to spend some time this evening, speaking about how to bring the mind to Krishna, to the sound of Krishna's name. And I'll just describe some things that are helpful. Besides, on the physical level is sitting properly and having sufficient rest so that you can be attentive, and in an overall manner, leading your life in a sattvic way. It's like the foods that you eat and the what you expose yourself to, the things that you read and listen to, and you know, just frame your life in quality of goodness. That's the physical side. And it helps bring the mind, because if the physical side is disrupted or disturbed or in darkness of ignorance, it's hard to bring the mind to rest, to a peaceful place, and absorb the mind in mantra, the sound. But even if, so with the assumption that some basic elements of goodness are there, framed in one's life, there's some effort that's required to bring the mind to Krishna, bring the mind to the sound of Krishna's name. One of those being the lifestyle that we lead, the environment that we're in, is a, like the discussion last night, is driven by fruitive purposes. The passion of achieving the fruits of our work and enjoying the fruits of our work, because we're entitled and we're supposed to. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to enjoy. That's the mode of passion message is like that. And so we're so accustomed to and driven by, when you have some quiet moment, then the mind is still going to, you know, plan the next thing, the next 20 things. Multiprocessing while you're doing one thing. You're accustomed to that. So a certain amount of discipline is required. And discipline, to have discipline of the mind, some things that help discipline of the mind is to have an intelligence that's directing the mind. So because according to the Vedic picture of things, Prabhupada is described like this, that there's basically four planes of consciousness: sensual, mental, intellectual, and spiritual. And spiritual, the material picture is things are upside down. So that the soul gets lost because people are driven by their senses, and the senses dictate to the mind, I want something. And then the mind summonses the intelligence and requests the intelligence, or directs the intelligence, please make an arrangement so I can get that sense object. And material intelligence very immediately serves the mind, and the soul is lost. So it has to be an inversion of the whole process, where, because if the goal is the spiritual plane, then the intelligence has to understand what the spiritual plane is, distinct from the material plane, just like Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita. His very first thing in Bhagavad Gita is to explain what the platform of the soul is, and how it's quite distinct from the body, or the covering of the soul. Matter and spirit are quite distinct. That's that discerning of these two things is a function of intelligence. Intelligence discriminates between one thing and another thing. Thank you. door that you just come quietly in. Welcome. Thank you. So it's important to help focus the mind on chanting. It's important to have the intelligence become strong in understanding the importance of spiritual sound, the importance of fixing the mind upon spiritual sound, what spiritual sound is, like this. We're hearing the glories of the Holy Name, hearing the glories of spiritual sound. Nama Chintamani Krishna, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. It's the form, Vigraha, of Rasa. It's the life force of the form, of taste, spiritual taste. It's completely pure, nitya mukto, always on the transcendental liberated platform. And the name Krishna is not different than the object or the person, Krishna. Because it's absolute, the sound. We're establishing a relationship with Krishna. The act of chanting is we've forgotten Krishna and we're establishing a relationship with Krishna. To get to the soul platform, we have to acknowledge Krishna before we can begin a relationship with him. So establishing that relationship through bringing the mind to Krishna. When chanting japa or in kirtan, it's easy in kirtan to get absorbed, but it's also easy for the mind to wander. So, a conscious effort to bring the mind, it's in one sense it's mechanical, or not personal, but mechanical, but in the higher sense it's recognizing the name of Krishna is not different than Krishna, so it's not just mechanical, it's Krishna. Like you invited so many people into your home. Each of those persons you know, so when you see them, it's how happy you are to see them and how happy they are to see you, and it's very personal. There are certain behaviors that are polite and respectful, and, but the essence is not just those behaviors. The essence is the breathing, the reconnecting, the reestablishing of the relationship. So the mind flowing to Krishna is actually that. Although in the beginning, because of the beginning stages of bringing the mind to Krishna, it may feel like, wow, it's mechanical. But that's just because of our impersonal state or covered state or dry state. And so it's bringing our original state, our healthy, happy, normal spiritual state, again, to bear through the medium of the mind. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada speaks about this, that in all yoga practice, the mind is essential. It's the fulcrum is what moves the lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. You have to have, if your fulcrum collapses, you're not going to leverage your lower consciousness to higher consciousness. The mind has to be firm and fixed. This saying this made me think of, there's one of our devotees. I'm sharing this with you, our yoga instructor. He's a yoga instructor. He's a sannyasi, and he's a minister. He's a sannyasi minister, but he's also the minister of health and welfare. And he gives seminars on yoga. And then part of yoga is sound, so he connects the sound with yoga. He was showing me, he was visiting New York after having spent some time in Europe, and said some devotees that are learning how to teach yoga, taking this yoga type and that yoga type, and so they were sharing that with Kaladananda Swami, and he took them through a little exercise. Then he said, let me take you through the exercise rather than just talking about it. Such as, you know, stand straight, place your feet in this position. So he was going through this little thing, and halfway through he said, really, you know, yoga in one sense is stretching, but really it's strengthening the mind. Because where the mind goes, then your body goes. So it's very important to have the capacity to do even hatha yoga, to have your mind, so any system of yoga, and for that matter any system of any discipline, education, your mind is all over the place, you're not going to be able to focus on the subject. You know, what the target of academic study or yoga practice is it on the platform of the body, or the platform of the mind, the platform of intelligence, or the platform of the soul? So, if fortunately the process of chanting, it brings us right to Krishna, but still the mind has to. There has to be some discipline. So a message here is, having a spiritual conception of what that sound vibration is helps one to bring the mind to that sound vibration. The intelligence gives direction to the mind, in other words. What's that conception of what the holy name is? Helps. The more we're clear, it helps. Have your intelligence strong, give direction to the mind. Then another notion that's connected with discipline is, besides having the right conception, how does one get the right conception? Just like the whole idea of spiritual master and disciple, the connection is discipline. So there's a, what's going to discipline the mind? Go to Krishna. Krishna is all attractive, that's already there. The understanding of what spiritual sound does, the more one can understand that, and even more importantly, experience it, then one can go there. One can connect the mind to go there. But something that helps direct the mind to go there is this spiritual master-disciple relationship, where because of the strength of the relationship, just like establishing relationship with Krishna, but Krishna is so far away. Sometimes we think like that. He's not so far away. He's the nearest thing to us. In fact, he's within our heart. Can't get any nearer than that. But we think, oh, it's so far away. Then the function of spiritual master is to bring the connection with Krishna, the link one with Krishna through that relationship with spiritual master, through instructions and guidance. So then being disciplined by the spiritual master, that brings discipline in one's life. The spiritual master and the disciple brings discipline in one's life. On the strength of my trust in that relationship, I'm ready to not physically perform the act, But then, it, through the next gate is bring the mind to Krishna. And the strength of the instruction, besides my reasoning power and my the conceptions that I'm carrying, the force of the instruction to do so. And by submission to that instruction of the instructor or the discipline of the spiritual master, then I can go there. Like it's like there's empowerment, strength to the mind. It helps strengthen and discipline the mind. That feeling the potency, the support, the direction given by the spiritual master. And then same idea, but just extending it in a broader sense, the great personalities of in the line of disciplic succession who have perfected their lives so wonderfully. Through a spiritual process. You had asked me when I visited in April if I could speak about Govinda Ghosh. I was thinking of fulfilling your request this evening. As an example of what I'm saying, there was an associate of Lord Chaitanya whose name was Govinda Ghosh. And when Lord Chaitanya was going to leave Puri to go to Vrindavan, when he went with a whole entourage of devotees, Govinda Ghosh was in that entourage of devotees because he was completely attached to Lord Chaitanya. He couldn't imagine being existing without Lord Chaitanya's association, so when Lord Chaitanya left, he was part of that whole entourage. And he had the opportunity, because of that relationship that he had with Lord Chaitanya, that he would do some service. So, one time in the... Because Lord Chaitanya, as we know, he didn't go straight to Vrindavan, from Puri to Vrindavan on a straight line is that way on the map. He went to see his mother and the Ganga and meet Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. So in the course of his passing through Bengal, there was some requirement that Lord Chaitanya requested for some haritaki, so like a medicine. And so Govinda Ghosh was happy to have some service for Lord Chaitanya. He went and got some haritaki, and Lord Chaitanya was tasting the haritaki, and he knew that Govinda Ghosh had more than what he had given to Lord Chaitanya. He said, "Where did you get that?" He described and said, "Do you have more?" Knowing that he had more. He said, "Oh yes, I have some more." Thinking I can give him some more. Lord Chaitanya then spoke purposefully, saying, "Govinda, this, I'm a sannyasi. The business of a sannyasi is not to accumulate things. How can I travel to Vrindavan with one who wants to accumulate things? Govinda Ghosh, you should just stay here in this place and worship the deity of Gopinath." And Govinda Ghosh thought, this is a punishment. But it wasn't a punishment. It was an act of great mercy. So then Lord Chaitanya said, "And you should become a householder." And he thought, "Oh." Not only I can't be in Lord Chaitanya's association, he's casting me away from him. But all a number of the chief associates of Lord Chaitanya are sannyasis, and he's directly instructing me to become a householder. So, but he had the order of Lord Chaitanya. So he began worshipping Gopinath. After some time he became married And after time, he had a son. And after some time, his wife died and his son died. So he thought, I fulfilled the instruction before Chaitanya. Now I can go and join Lord Chaitanya. And the Gopinath deity let Govinda know, you can't abandon me. Like a child might say to a parent, in a dream, he appeared in his dream and indicated, you can't leave me. You must stay in worship. Take care of me. And a very deep relationship developed between Govinda and his deity of Gopinath. And through the worship, by following the instruction that Lord Chaitanya gave, which appeared initially to be a punishment, like rejection, you're not qualified, you leave me. It was not at all that. It was a benediction to give him that service of Gopinath, the Lord of the Gopis. Although the appearance was something else. A very, very... he became very elevated, perfected in his Krishna consciousness through that, through taking the instruction Lord Chaitanya gave and carrying it in his heart, making it his life and soul. He actually was renounced, in other words, although Lord Chaitanya's indication appeared to be otherwise, and his behavior appeared to be otherwise. So, the way that the mind can become focused best is through that medium of taking an instruction as one's life and soul. It's right in Bhagavad Gita in the purport of 241, so you can look it up later. Chapter 2, text 41. Yavasayatmika bhuti ekeha kura nambana bahushaka yanantas chak at verse. Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who says that the way that one can become fixed in this buddhi, where the intelligence doesn't waver, and when the intelligence doesn't waver, when the mind starts to waver, the intelligence brings the mind to this unwavering position, is when one takes the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. Then fixed determination will come. Fixed intelligence will come. On the path of spiritual life, not deviated by the whim and fancy of the mind, the attractions and repulsions of the mind, the endless, endless energy the mind can have us chase after, the dictates of the mind. By taking the instructions of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. That's a Vedic principle. So that's a nice principle. Then how do we bring it into our life? Because we're undisciplined. We value our freedom very much. In fact, that's what brings us to the material world. A spirit of independence. And this other program is like losing our independence. We lose our freedom. But actually, we lose our bondage. So the whole program has to turn right side up again. Put Krishna at the top. And this relationship with Krishna at the very top. And then to assist us in doing that, relationship with those that are going to guide us to Krishna through scripture, and the practices that don't have anything to do with fruitive activity. Chanting, fixing the mind on Krishna. You're not going to get rich from an accruative sense of become wealthy through that process. But you become spiritually wealthy through that process. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had such a wonderful loving relationship with Kolavichar Sridhar, described in Chaitanya Bhagavatam. Kolavichar Sridhar's position was, he was a Vaishya, he was a merchant, and but his wares that he sold were banana leaves and banana flowers and cups made from banana leaves. So plates and cups and banana flowers. And how many banana trees are there in Bengal? A gazillion of them. So all you have to do is climb up the tree and you got your banana leaf. But he would sit by the side of the Ganga and sell them for whatever small amount. And Lord Chaitanya would regularly go and apparently taunt and tease Kolavichar Sridhar, snatching them, demanding he give him a good price. I'm a brahmana, you should give me a good price. Actually, you should give it to me for nothing, for charity. And teasing and teasing him, like Kolavichar would say, you know, leave me alone. You're a Brahmin, why are you doing this? And Lord Chaitanya would sometimes say, Kolavichar, someday I'm going to disclose the real truth that you have a great treasure. You're just hiding your great treasure. You're immensely wealthy. You just dress yourself as if you're some poor man, but I know you have a great, and he had a great treasure, the treasure of his faith in the holy name. And with that faith, love of God. How does that faith come? It certainly comes from experience, but how do we get that experience? By taking, faith grows by taking instructions that we've received and applying them. Taking good instruction, Prabhupada gives the example of, if you have a disease, or some illness, how do you address the illness? Maybe some people just don't do anything, just like let it go. Maybe eventually the body will heal itself, but if it's a more serious disease, you may, or illness, you may go to a physician. But then, what physician do you go to? There's so many people that are claiming to be physicians. So you ask your friends, who's a good physician in this field? You get enough recommendations. Okay, there's some faith, I'll go to this person. You go to this person, and like last summer, I had some skin rash. It was like, I was concerned. I thought, I heard of skin cancer. Maybe it's skin cancer. I better find out. Mm. I want to find out from a specialist, not just some dodo. I want to find out. Maybe I'll have to do whatever those, you know, some biopsy and take some skin and see if it's cancer. So I asked her, it went through the same process. Oh, there's this one, we've been going to this one man. And, okay, so I went to the, and, you know, in his office were all these degrees of all these things he's done, and wow, and all these records. So there's some faith in the doctor. And then his diagnosis was instant. He looked at it and said, that's not a problem. That's, you know, you have fair skin, it's just you're sensitive to the light. As your body's getting older, don't worry about it. Here's some cream, just rub it on, it's gone. So there's enough faith to go to the doctor, enough faith he's got, you know, there's some other things that we exchange it. Yeah, but see, he's not a superficial man, he's a deep person. Here's something that he shared with me. I was sitting in a room waiting while he was attending to another patient. There was all this stuff all over the walls, like, you know, cartoons and things and this and that. And I said, you know, you've got a fascinating office in here. And he said, well, it's purposeful. I said, can you explain? He said, yes. I learned something in the course of medicine that part of a person's problem is they just like get absorbed in their problem. So this is just to distract their mind from their problem. So that when I come to see them, you know, I can get right to them, not just what all their absorption in their problem. Okay. And then I asked them some other questions. So I had some faith. And to take the medicine and apply the medicine, and they applied the medicine, and sure enough, zoom. Of course, I had to keep applying the medicine because it deteriorated enough that I required to do it over a period of time. So faith increased in the physician because I followed the instruction and in a diligent way, and sure enough, it works. So now I have faith, and next time somebody says, Houston, does you have a dermatologist that you recommend? Oh, yeah, I recommend him. So when we have, Prabhupada's expression in Bhagavad Gita is, when you act in knowledge, that it increases faith, because if it's proper knowledge and you do it, something happens. And when that something happens, it nourishes faith. Instruction is a good instruction. The instructor is a good instructor. So when we apply the instruction that we receive, it nourishes faith. And when faith is nourished, then it's easier when you apply yourself to the practice of chanting to absorb the mind because of faith. And it just continues as long as we don't get lazy. Think, oh, now the skin rash is gone, I can forget the doctor and forget the cream and forget the whole deal. It's just party time again. But our spiritual journey is something that requires some sincerity from our side. We want to get to the goal. We want to have, once again, a relationship with Krishna that helps keep the mind focused and takes one to the next level, the heart level, and then to the soul level. Hare Krishna. To be continued in the 4th of July weekend, the festival of the Holy Name. I'll make that chart. I saw it moving down. Any discussion on this topic? Bringing the mind to the Holy Name.
It seems, on your beautiful lecture, it seems that one of the most important factors in getting our mind to be able to focus on the Holy Name is having a guide by the intelligence, which is built in a strong relationship with the spiritual master. And many times we don't get so many personal instructions from our spiritual master, we get in a general way. And
well, is it not okay to think of those general instructions as personal? Like, read the Bhagavad Gita, and who is Prabhupada speaking to? And if you read Bhagavad Gita in that way, the Prabhupada is speaking to you. You're a whole lot more attentive. The relationship, the connection is made. One devotee whose name I won't mention, they're not here, so it's okay. They said, oh, I have a hard time reading Bhagavad Gita. I just can't get into it. So I made this very same suggestion. Read it in this way. Think, okay, I'm a world acharya. My mission is to elevate the spiritual consciousness of the planet. Now I'm going to write something that's going to elevate all these souls and then you write, and then somebody on the other end is reading, and if that somebody on the other end is reading, then they take it, this is meant for me in a personal way, which it is. Then they can connect with that personal relationship, although it's the whole world, the universe of audience. So read in that way. Prabhupada was writing to, like this phrase, one by one, take persons to the lotus feet of Krishna. That's his mission. It's personal. It's a personal instruction. Take it that way. Or Krishna is speaking. He's speaking to Arjuna, but he's speaking to us through Arjuna. It's personal. Then, when we read in that way, or hear in that way, although the instructions are general, we apply it. Remember this other message of how to make transformation of heart through hearing. It has to touch the soul. And then some feelings stir, like gratitude. Wow. How many times have you heard, I've heard countless number of times, when Prabhupada was speaking, devotees would say, he looked right through me. He looked around the room and he saw everything. I could feel it. Right? I've sat through the, you know, this Prabhupada appreciation thing. Mm-hmm. And two out of three or three out of four persons said the same thing. So you could say, oh, but I was not so fortunate to sit in the room. But that potency is there in this book. It's the same person with the same empowerment, the same message. Just like you said, you know, whatever I've heard is just right on. And that's Krishna. And the representatives of Krishna are just representing Krishna. It's personal. It's from Krishna. It's not just the spiritual master. It's Krishna. The representative of Krishna. Just so Krishna is delivering a rope to pull you from the material situation. That's how you should. And then the system of representatives who of the spiritual master who work in that way. So say it another way, the network of loving relationships through a spiritual family works that way. It's the Krishna factor and coming in different flavors. And then you can see this representative is sent by my spiritual master, who is sent by Krishna. And therefore our teaching, Lord Chaitanya's teaching of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, makes all the sense in the world. Then it's not a matter of indirect, it's direct. You've heard this explanation before, but I'll share it with everybody. The spiritual master is said to be the representative of Krishna, but it's not that it's remote. Prabhupada gave the example of eyeglasses. The eyeglasses, because they're transparent, they're looking at that painting on the wall, like, you know, I can see some white and some black and a blur. But, oh, then I can see there's a camel, there's a horse, there's some people walking, they're holding different items. So the seeing is direct. to the medium of the transparent lens. So that's how instructions work. It's the medium to give us a direct experience. So one should see those persons who are, may not be in the category of my Diksha Guru, but they're persons who are, their duty is, they should see themselves as representatives of and assisting, and we should see them in that way also, by the mercy of Guru. These resources are coming my way to help bring you to Krishna. The second thing is, through the medium of technology, through recordings and so on, you can receive so many instructions. Wonderful instructions. And they're personal. And follow them. And feel that connection. Anything else? Yeah.
Well, I have two questions, I think. Uh-huh. One is between the sense, mind, intelligence, and soul, where is the platform of consciousness?
On the platform of the soul.
It's the consciousness.
The consciousness and the soul are concomitant factors. Not exactly consciousness is the soul. It's like the sun and the rays of the sun. So the soul is present within the body, and pervading the body is consciousness because of the presence of the soul. And when the soul leaves, consciousness leaves the body. Although the body is there. The consciousness is of the soul directly. And that consciousness animates the body. The presence of the soul animates the body.
Yeah. And the second thing is, in scriptures it says that when you do Harinam or Hare Krishna Mahamantra,
chanting, yeah.
Chanting, there are three ways. One is within mind itself, second is with your lips, and second is when you say it loudly. So which one is the most preferable?
Nice question. That was a discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Haridas Thakur. It's in Chaitanya Bhagavat also. There are some Brahmins who are debating this question, some saying this, some saying that. And Haridas Thakur, the Acharya for the chanting of the holy name, said that chanting is aloud is best. Chanting of the name, the holy name, is best, because not only you benefit, but others, other living entities benefit, and because the benefit is simultaneously going to others as well as for yourself, then the personality Godhead is pleased, and when he is pleased, that's the maximum spiritual benefit, is by our activity pleasing the personality Godhead, because not only we're benefiting but others. It's not salvation of self, but it's the same benefit going to others. So ut kirtan, or aloud kirtan, audible kirtan, is best. Having said that, there are types of mantras that are to not be chanted aloud, like Gayatri mantra is not to be loudly chanted, but murmured or within the mind chanted. But therefore this chanting of the holy name is even more beneficial, more munificent, because everyone can participate and hear. And a third thing is that it's easier to capture the mind through sound than just silent. Experience will. And therefore the chanting of the holy name comes first in sequence, and then after some time receiving initiation into the chanting of Gayatri. But one assists the other, and the other assists the one. They actually help one another to go further. But most important is Bhutkirtan, chanting out of it. Yeah?
Kamaraj, we are discussing chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. And in that, Krishna is explaining that by practicing detachment, one can come to control the mind. And in that purport, Śrīla Prabhupāda writes, I think in that purport, I might be wrong, in that section, that sometimes the mind is so strong that it can, even when intelligence is strong, the mind can overcome, just as a disease sometimes proves more powerful than the medicine itself.
Yeah.
So that's our experience. My experience specifically also, that sometimes the mind is so strong. Yesterday I was asked a similar question. That the mind is so strong, even after trying, it's still that we give in to the urges of the mind. So how do we understand our situation and how to overcome that?
One comment, first of all, is a wrong conclusion would be, therefore, don't worry about your intelligence. We do require proper understanding of things and proper direction of the intelligence to the mind. But that's not sufficient. So, therefore, the next principle that I discussed is the connection of devotion through the attractiveness of Krishna being illumined by the relationship with one who was in touch with Krishna. And that's more strength than our own intelligence. It's superior intelligence and superior strength as well, the potency of bhakti can carry one. Or, say differently, it directly empowers the intelligence to go with that, to be able to not just our strength of our own, but divine strength. And that's where the element of faith comes. Without faith, how can there be practice? With practice, abhyasa. How can there be constant practice or regular practice without some faith? So same discussion as before. How do you develop faith? Acting, one statement is in the association of devotees, but more specifically, by acting in knowledge, it nurtures faith. So we're inconsistent in our practice because our faith is weak. Or, you know, we're attached, we invest faith in temporary things, that that's going to bring happiness.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can you ask me a question?
Sure.
Chanting Prana Mantra is without bead is as good as with bead?
Is it as good as your question?
They're always good.
But if he were to say as good, then the question would be, then why have beads? So there's a certain value in having beads, and there's discipline. Taking a vow to chant a certain number of times, okay, as a daily breath up. So we keep beads. And then after completing, then when they chant without beads or when they chant with beads, or at least some particular fixed amount of chanting.
We have to have the environment of goodness to make our mind control so that we can chant better.
Yeah.
So how do you really make the environment, the way we work, the way environment where we live, you know, the surroundings, I don't know how really to, looking at that, maybe the mind cannot control, and you know, it tends towards the sensual pleasures, then really it's upside down, as you said. But
yeah.
How do you really make that environment?
Well, we all have some place where we live, so you make that place where you live infused with the principles of goodness, like starting with cleanliness, simplicity, colors, the sounds, the sights that are, you know, what's on the walls, and entertainment, what you do with your, how you spend your time in that space, at your home, and there's a discussion with our hosts here about the schedule that you, the regularity of the lifestyle that you live, like rising early on a regular basis, in the early morning hours, engaging yourself in motive goodness activity, particularly spiritual activity, and being very consistent with that. And so regularity is a symptom of goodness. Cleanliness is a symptom of goodness. Simplicity is a symptom of goodness. You go through the chapters of Bhagavad Gita that describe foods in the mode of goodness, happiness in the mode of goodness, knowledge in the mode of goodness, plus also passion. So you rule out the other ones and you incorporate the goodness ones. And then the workplace. Now the workplace is passion and ignorance. Hardly any goodness. We can carry that quality within us and bring that into the workplace and not be simply driven by things that drive most people. You know, just get the job done or get the promotion or get the bonus or, you know, get the fruit. No holds barred. Just, you know, get that little baby. Grab a hold of it and, you know, knock the other guys out of the way to get it. But choose to not do that. And that, you know, that may have its price in one sense in terms of, you know, informative marketplace. But then those people that do that, they pay their price doing that. There's all kinds of details in that area. But if the principle is considered, then knowing Bhagavad Gita, then one can frame one's life in the policy of goodness, truthfulness, compassion, qualities of goodness in the various arenas that you lead your life. Food, the books that you read, how you spend discretionary time, and the way in which you spend that discretionary time.